Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter.
The typical American family is paying $11,434 more for the same exact standard of living that you had when Joe Biden took office. The median priced home is up 80 to 100% during his 3 years. Gasoline for your car, it's up 60%. Food costs are up 21%. Electricity, 28%. Rent is up 20%. And the price of eating out is up 21% on average.
Well, that's Mike Huckabee describing, you know, some of the challenges that our personal finances are facing with, you know, the ravages of inflation and the resultant tremendous increase in cost. Yet the headline numbers, the markets and the Biden people keep telling us the macroeconomics look good. When I have questions and when you have questions about the economy and sort of historically, what does it mean, the metrics that we hear about, and I need answers, I go to Eric Robert, who along with Bob Stockdale, of course, are on the Stiefel on the Money radio show. And that follows us every morning here, every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on News Talk STL. Eric, thanks for joining me. We've got a lot to talk about this day.
We sure do, Randy. It's a pleasure being here.
So last week we saw, before this past week, we saw the sticker inflation number, you know, are the unemployment numbers not be what they should be. This week, we see the personal consumption index up and a measure of inflation up a little bit. We hear the Fed may push back their rate cutting until 25 now. Who knows? A lot of tumultuous activity in the markets as a result. And then the GDP number comes out this week, 1.6% growth in the first quarter, down from 3.4% the previous quarter and 4.9% in the peak of the so-called recovery last year. How do we put this all together in about, 30 seconds or less? Just kidding. Take all the time you need.
Sure. Well, you know, this GDP number, no doubt about it, it's not what we wanted to see. It was a miss from expectations. Expectations were for GDP growth to slow to around a 2.3% pace on an annual basis in the first quarter, and it came in at a 1.6% annualized rate for the quarter. If you remember, this wasn't really ancient history, back in the first two quarters of 2022, when we had a recession scare, there was a concern that we may be slipping into a recession. We had two consecutive quarters of either flat or negative GDP growth, depending on which timeline you're measuring. And we talked about that a lot back then, Randy. If you recall, the reason why many economists in the beginning of 2022 were not calling it a recession was because the reason why we had those negative GDP numbers at the time wasn't because you had consumer spending and consumer growth or business investment actually go negative. It was because of imports, which are one of the components of GDP. And the more that we import into the United States economy, that actually detracts from GDP. Well, that's also the story of the first quarter GDP. So first quarter GDP, the headline number came in at a 1.6% annualized rate. You saw an initial negative reaction from markets, but once people got to kind of look at the number, things stabilized. No one's celebrating the number, to be clear. It's really more that personal consumption expenditures inflation data that you referenced that's kind of weighing on things recently. But when you take imports out of first quarter GDP, the U.S. economy grew at a 3.1% annual rate, which is a healthy rate, albeit still not where we want to be relative to the inflation that we're seeing. If you want to compare that against the fourth quarter grew at a 3.3% annual rate when you take out imports. So it's really the story about an increase in imports that pulled back the headline GDP number. It's not a number that is causing, and from what I can see, most economists or market prognosticators to run for the fences here. It's relatively disappointing, but it was more of a miss on the volume of imports than the actual growth story.
Okay, well, that's interesting news that I hadn't heard, and so I'm sure you're going to be unpacking, you know, these stories more, including that bit of info on the show today. I am concerned, though, about, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I read that when you look at the GDP, while it may have been throttled back a little bit because of the imports. What about this consumer spending? That seemed to be a big driver. The consumer spending was up 2.5%, I read, according to Wall Street Journal. How long can consumer spending on the wings of what seems to be some of the highest, and I know you've said historically adjusted for inflation, you know, it's not as bad as it looks with the, what, you know, $1.5 trillion, whatever it is on credit card. But it seems like a lot of people are spending and spending, and yet we hear about personal debt continue to rise. How long can that ship float on what seem to be fumes fueling the engine? I mean, how long can people keep spending and borrowing before they stop spending and then, you know, things turn south with GDP and everything else?
But a lot of it depends on which side of the consumer balance sheet you're looking at. Whenever I mean which side, I mean which side of the income spectrum you fall. Wealthier consumers, wealthier households are still doing just fine, go figure. And frankly, have considerably lower amounts of debt on their personal balance sheets than they did headed into the pandemic, or really have historically. Now, those who are on the lower end of the economic spectrum, who are struggling with the inflationary prices, you have seen a rise in credit use among those people. It's still actually on an inflation-adjusted basis, not quite back to the highs that we saw in 2019. The pandemic, all of the cash transfers that took place over those years and changing consumer habits really were kind of a reset moment for consumer debt. So we're not back to nosebleed levels yet, but you can't rule out that we get there. There's no doubt about it. Higher persistent inflation hurts people on the lower end of the economic spectrum more, and they're having to put things on credit cards and use debt for reasons that we historically would discourage, things like just getting by with groceries and things of that nature. It's not been enough to weigh down the U.S. economy. I mean, I think the real story of this GDP print, you mentioned the 2.5% annualized consumer growth, spending growth. It's almost unfathomable how strong the U.S. consumers have been despite these headwinds. That doesn't appear to be changing just yet. And let's be honest, the people don't want, even regardless of how you feel about, you know, the people running the country or how you feel about the economy on your day to day. A lot of people are still bitter and upset about the persistent inflation. I'm right there with you. I do the groceries in our house. It never ceases to amaze me how much they cost, and I'm still not over it. But nonetheless, people don't want to limit their spending to do what they want to do at any given time, regardless of the broader economic backdrop. And that appears to be what consumers are carrying forward with right now.
Yeah, we're talking with Eric Robert, of course, who, along with Bob Stockdale, anchor the Stiefel on the Money show here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. You know, I just wonder, you know, in the context of now an election cycle, we hear Joe Biden talking about really being pretty aggressive about having the tax cuts that were brought in under the Trump administration that are set to sunset the end of next year, the end of 25, that those will sunset. And he wants to, though, wants to take the corporate tax rate from, what, 21 to 28%, and he alleges only taxing people that if you make under 400,000, you won't be taxed. That seems to me to be, that could be a real nail in the coffin of what is sort of a struggling now and then economy. I mean, there's a lot of signs either way, but wouldn't that be the worst thing to do, to raise that corporate tax rate? Because, I mean, will that mean that only these rich fat cats are paying those taxes, or is it going to filter down to everyday people if that happens?
Yeah. So, you know, corporate tax rates and corporate tax cuts or increases are often a political volleyball because, let's be honest, nobody, you know, normal people don't feel bad for whoever that runs that corporation, whatever their tax rate goes up by 25 or 30%. But you have to reframe corporate tax cuts and corporate tax rates as consumer tax cuts or consumer tax increases, because corporations don't just sit there and take less income as a result. Corporations ultimately have to serve their shareholders. So the reason why you saw an expansion in what's called price earnings multiples after the corporate tax cuts in 2018, where you saw markets drive significantly higher over time, was because when you lower the corporate tax burden, it drives directly back to consumers. Consumers are able to increase spending, get more money for their dollar. Well, the inverse is also true. If you significantly increase corporate tax rates, that could fuel inflation. That could fuel price increases because corporations are going to look to make it up by passing on higher costs to consumers. Randy, one thing I think, you know, in the context of an election season, there's a very interesting indicator, what's known as the misery index. And the misery index is basically where you add up the year over year change in CPI inflation and unemployment. For every election going back to 1960, if the misery index was higher from October the year preceding the election to the October of the election, whoever was in party or in power lost that election. Right now, the misery index sits at 7.05%. That's the combination of our CPI inflation and our unemployment rate. In October of 2023, it was 7.3%. So even a slight uptick in either inflation or unemployment here would suggest that the misery index may wind up being higher than it was a year ago, but it's not there today. And I think that's reflected in how close, you know, overall polling remains in the race.
Yeah. Well, that relates to another story I wanted to ask you about before we close out. And that's a new metric that I read about in the Wall Street Journal called the CORE Index. Commission on Reimagining Our Economy. This was composed of so-called experts from a range of fields and political views, yada, yada. And this was by a couple of academics. But they talk about this. Is that sort of similar? It sounds like rather than the headline numbers that we hear about from the press, this is more of an amalgam that is supposed to represent sort of what's really going on in kitchen table economics and finance. Do you put much stock in something like that?
You know, anytime there's a new metric created, the answer is no, I don't put any stock in it, just because it hasn't been around long enough. And you need to see these things play out over time. The misery index, which I was referring to there, that's been followed, and it's very simple. You know, unemployment rates and CPI have been tracked for decades. We can understand the influences and see how they come together. I don't know enough about what's called the CORE score that you're referring to tell you how reasonable of an estimate it is. But no doubt about it, the attitudes of consumers, the attitudes of, you know, the broader public, are not aligned with many of the headline economic growth stories. You know, if we had back in the fourth quarter when we had 3.4% annualized GDP growth, we all would have been throwing parties 5 years ago. We would have been saying, oh my gosh, 3.4% GDP growth, that's phenomenal. In the third quarter, we had 5% plus GDP growth. We would have been going crazy with that. But it didn't feel that great, did it? Well, whenever you have persistent high inflation, nothing feels that great. And it takes a lot to overcome it. That's the story of 2024. This inflation fight isn't over yet. And getting from where we are, kind of the low to mid 3% inflation numbers, back to the Fed's target of 2% could prove to be more difficult than all that work that it took to get it from the peak of 9% down to the low threes where we are today.
Okay, final question. When I looked into some of the details on the unemployment numbers the other day, the employment numbers that came out a couple of weeks ago as part of the employment report, it appeared as though the big drivers, the big gainers were government, state and local government, and healthcare. Now, state and local government don't produce anything. They just take people's money and they take it out of the capital markets. So I don't view that as a big win in employment. And healthcare is funded at least 60%. I think the latest numbers I saw are close to 2/3, if not approaching 70% of federal dollars, which means either borrowed or taxed money. So I'm not really optimistic about that, those employment numbers and where those pools of employment are coming that were really the big winners of employment in this local report, or this latest report. Am I over cynical about that, or what do you think?
You know, I guess I don't share, I wouldn't use cynicism to describe the labor market right now from my view. The labor market is very robust. Yes, we aren't seeing growth in some areas where we would like to see more of it. In particular, I mean, you have seen net over net declines in certain areas, particularly with higher paying, you know, tech sector jobs. There's been a lot of layoffs in that sector over the last 18 months or so. And in the manufacturing sector, we just briefly for a few months went positive with manufacturing growth in the United States in the first quarter. And as we'll talk about in a little bit on the Money, that those numbers recently dipped back into a contraction area. Those are important jobs for large areas of the country. That you know, not everybody can go work at Google or Apple or, you know, a place like that. You need to have a strong manufacturing base, and we need to see those numbers shore up. Government being aggressively involved in our employment numbers has been a theme in recent years. I don't expect it to change, but it also doesn't make me excited about, you know, any of the headline numbers whenever you see that a big part of it's coming from an increase in government jobs.
Well, I'll disagree with you there. It not only doesn't make me excited, it worries me, because I don't think, like I say, I never saw government. I don't care what Nancy Pelosi says. For every dollar of, quote, investment, you get $3 in the whatever return government. I think that's, as Sherman T. Potter said, horse hockey. Final question. GDP warning as signs of stagflation appear. To circle back to what we talked about at the top, that's the opinion article on the Wall Street Journal. A GDP warning as signs of stagflation appear. Are we going back to the 70s?
It doesn't appear so yet. Okay. We haven't we've had a persistent inflation that's not falling to the levels we want it to. Inflation is not spiking here. It's not like we have durably high inflation and high unemployment without being in a recession. I think it would, okay. this is a guess. I don't have a crystal ball here, nor do I ever. But to the extent we saw a significant increase in unemployment alongside an increase in inflation, I think a recession would be much more likely than prolonged stagflation. That's just guess, because I think the Fed would respond sharply to that.
Well, it's going to be an interesting thread the needle proposition. And then, of course, you have it on top of that, the whole political gamesmanship that goes on. So we'll have to see it. Hey, thanks for checking in with us time to time and really putting some sharpness on the dull edge of my economic knife, because it is a little dull, I have to admit. But thank you for sharpening the edge.
Absolutely. Randy, I think this goes to show you've got to take an informed view of the headlines that you read. Numbers and statistics can be twisted to say whatever you want. I'm not here to tell you everything's perfect with these economic numbers. That's not the case, and certainly markets have recognized that recently. But it's also not as bad as it might seem from the headlines.
That's good to hear. It's good to hear on an otherwise potentially gloomy bunch of reports here. I'm glad to hear there may be a little bit of some sunshine on that. Thanks, Eric. We look forward to the next conversation and to listening later on today.
Thanks, Randy.
All right, there he is. Make sure you tune into the show. I always do right after the show here. I'm usually working around the house, doing something, you know, I need to get caught up on. And I love listening to Bob and Eric as they talk about some of these money matters. Very important to us. Hey, it's your turn to weigh in. 314-912-1019. Lots more coming up on the Tobler Show. Join us.
Corporate tax rates and corporate tax cuts or increases are often a political volleyball. Corporations don't just sit there and take less income as a result. When you lower the corporate tax burden, it drives directly back to consumers.
Nibbling on sponge cake, watching the sun bake.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Welcome back into the program. Number's 314-912-1019 if you'd like to join me here on News Talk STL. And Jerome would be happy to take your call, and we'll get you on if you want to weigh in on the topics of the day, whether it's the crazy chaos campus cacophony going on. And I'm afraid it's going to spread. I'm just afraid it's going to spread and maybe spill into the streets and become a problem if we don't nip it in the bud early. I mean, some campuses have done that. Others haven't. You expect kids to be impetuous and, you know, do their little petty, you know, protesting. That's fine. But when it disrupts official proceedings, when it gets in the way of proper academic instruction, when they're blocking the Golden Gate Bridge, when they're, you know, getting in the way of things with illegal behavior, it's got to stop. So whether it's on the college campuses or otherwise, it's got to stop. But, you know, there's so much corruption around, too, that bothers me. We have the healthcare industrial complex. So that's government colluding with healthcare vendors to raise the prices. And those vendors can include insurance or tongue blade manufacturers, right? So this is anyone involved in the healthcare industry, except the people providing you care for the most part. Although some of them have sold out to the military industrial complex too. They become medical directors. I'm sorry if I'm offending some of you who may have gone and now you're working for United Healthcare or for Centene or anyone, but shame on you. You should know better. I mean, you know, joining the dark side, you weren't trained for that. You were trained to take care of patients, not to deny care and ration care. But anyway, we can have that discussion later. Give me a call if you want. You know what my Twitter is. Contact me. On the other hand, whether it's the healthcare industrial complex, whether it's the, because there's a collusion there. You know, the healthcare, the insurance vendors in Obamacare said, hey, make the people buy our product and we'll be happy to, yeah, give you a little break. We'll give up the underwriting for insurance. We'll insure everyone, but, you know, make sure you subsidize us on Medicare Advantage. And then, by the way, you know, make sure you guarantee that people buy our product and, you know, we'll work with you. Don't worry. We'll make this all work out. Meanwhile, their profits just skyrocket, absolutely skyrocket. And don't call me and say, Randy, you're sounding like AOC and Cori Bush. No, I'm not. It is not a free market in healthcare by any stretch of the imagination. It is a government subsidized, mostly funded, absolutely overregulated industry. So it is not a free market. And therefore, I can gripe about oligopolies in healthcare working the leverage through campaign donations and lobbying and writing of the statutes and the rules, because that's what happens. We know, those of us who are in the business know that, right? And when we call people out, we're called charlatans. You don't understand. What's wrong with you? We need regulation. No, not going to buy it. So that's one example. I can speak to that, and I know a lot about that. That's why I jumped off of that merry-go-round. I won't be a part of it. It's immoral. I don't do that in my practice. I don't bill insurance companies. I work for my patients, not for the insurance company. I'll help you if you have insurance, navigate it and try to get something out of it after you've paid thousands of dollars in premiums and, oh, then thousands of dollars of deductible. And then maybe you get into your insurance, but there's a better way. We all know it. The government knows it. The politicians know it. If you're a politician out there, you know there's a better way. If you're a healthcare industrial medical complex participant, you know there's a better way. But why would you admit to it? Why would you make it transparent? Because you'd be cutting your own throat at the altar of doing the right thing for patients, right? That's what this is about. At any rate, so you got that. You got then the medical industrial complex. You have the educational industrial complex. Same story, same book, different chapter, right? The special interest group, the industry, gathers together. In this case, it's administrators and teacher unions that then donate heavily to the politicians who write the rules and create these large bureaucracies, which in turn regulate the people that are donating to the politicians. That you see this beautiful positive feedback loop. It's only positive if you're not a student or a parent of a student, right? It's negative if from that perspective, but it's very, very positive for the educational industrial complex. And you see that what they've done is they've taken a page out of the old book of the of the defense industrial complex, the military industrial complex, right? And that's been the oldest one around. That's the template. And industry by industry, government gets in bed with industries that support government, throw the citizen under the bus, are the constituent of said industry. And as long as the hoity-toities, the fat cats, sitting in the industrial, you know, corporate centers or in the political centers, as long as they prosper, and like Eric Robert just said, hey, the spending's coming from that group because they're just bathing in the money while the rest of us are drowning in debt. And that's what's happening, right? So we know the story. Well, Congressman Mike Walls called out the military industrial complex at a recent hearing. You see, I don't just bloviate without some evidence here. So this hearing was going on, and I want you to picture this. He holds up what looks like a Ziploc bag or a bag of bushings, and he's talking about excess government spending on parts and repairs for airplanes, for fighter jets, right? And so what he does is he holds this up and he's talking. And this is how his discussion goes. Take a listen to this. It's not surprising. It's frankly very sad, but it tells the whole story. Listen.
A warning to America. 25 ways is being
destroyed. That's it. That's the wrong one. I think I'm probably looking for, okay, we're gonna get it right. I think it may be number three. Was that number three or number six?
This, Mr. Secretary, is a bag of bushings.
There you go.
This bag of bushings, stamped out by machinists, don't need a high school diploma. It's not anything high tech about this. All of this bag is compliant with the FAA specifications. How much do you think the Air Force pays for this bag of bushings?
I don't know, Carson.
$90,000. This is a $90,000 bag of bushings that you need for any jet turbine engine.
So he exposes the game going on here, ladies and gentlemen. It's a big game. Boeing or Northrop Grumman or General Dynamics or Lockheed, and RFK called this out properly. That's why RFK is going to steal votes from Trump. From disaffected Trump voters, RFK is going to take votes. Because he exposes, I know this from the medical industry, and I can see how true this, you've heard about the $50,000, the $500 hammer. Okay, he just exposed it. Instead of getting bushings that would work in the commercial airliners that you and I fly, oh, no, Boeing, Lockheed Grumman, if you want us to honor, we've got to get OEM equipment. And since, wink, 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 by the way, you got to get that OEM equipment. And here's a campaign donation. You know how this is working. And I don't know how we get at it. The only thing I can say is, look, there are certain elements of corruption that we probably have to tolerate and try to manage as best we can just on a constitutional basis, right? Okay, so as I think this through, the Constitution mentions nothing about education, nothing about a federal role in education, zero. Yet we now have a large education industrial complex that is basically education in bed with the federal government. The federal government tells you how your rules are going to go. It filters down to the states. You get federal money, state money, some local money too. Okay, but ultimately, it's run by the federal government. And boy, how's that working out for us as our academic achievement continues to sink and sink and sink while China rises and rises and rises? So do other jurisdictions. Okay. So that's one that we don't have to tolerate corruption in. The Department of Education should go away on January 22nd of 2025 if we elect the right person. Just gone. Done. Okay, but if you're going to tolerate it, okay, let's tolerate it only where it's needed if we're going to tolerate corruption, because there's a certain element of that. When the government has to deal with vendors, the vendors are going to make their specifications so high that only that vendor can meet them. So once you buy that vendor's product, well, you're in bed with that, and you're sort of beholden to them, right? Because you have a proprietary product. Okay. So, okay, but the government is responsible for defense. They are responsible for security. They are not responsible for defense, nor are they responsible for healthcare. They're not responsible for education, nor are they responsible for healthcare. And yet we have ceded our personal responsibility, which we share with our families and our communities and our charitable organizations, or that's the way it used to be. We share that with people that we can touch at arm's length, maybe even at the state level. If you think your state should be involved with heavily socialized things, fine, let the California be California. If you're listening in the People's Republic of Illinois, let the People's Republic of Illinois be socialized, whatever. You deal with that. But you shouldn't be fleeced by Illinois and by the federal government, at least just get fleeced by one. Or you can choose to be free and minimally taxed and only necessities are provided. I'm thinking Tennessee, Florida, Texas, right? I mean, you know, why Missouri legislators can't follow those templates, I don't understand. I don't get. But it happens. Well, that's where we're at. I don't know, man. I get disappointed. If you get disappointed, let me know as we wrap it up here with your comments and thoughts on the Tobler Show. 314-912-1019. We do have a little sort of wrap-up why Biden is ruining America, too, that we'll play, given the time. Stay with us on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer. On News Talk STL.
Good morning, everybody. Tony Colombo and Katie Fitzpatrick here.
Thanks for listening to The Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL. And don't forget to join us every weekday at 2 p.m. for Colombo and Katie.
Also, keep it here for my Saturday morning show, The Bluff City Outdoor Show, today at 11. Now back to Dr. Randy Tobler. Love you, Doc.
And I will be listening to that show. I'll be out in the great outdoors. I think I'm going to spread some copper sulfate in the Liberty Lake Liberty here on the Liberty Lair. Go out in the John boat and put some crystals of copper sulfate in a gunny sack and drag it along the shore, just inside the algae line that's blooming. You don't want too much algae, but you want just the mite or Goldilocks amount of algae. Cover for the fish as they start spawning. So I'll be doing that as I listen to Tony's show. You know, I have an emptiness this Saturday because I missed my hit with Tony and Katie this week. So hopefully we'll get back on track there. You know, we talk a lot about what's going on and at least recognizing some of the problems and at least trying to figure out, okay, where are we now? Are we headed in the right direction? Because sometimes you're going in the wrong direction. You don't realize it and you have to do a correction. You know, that happens in life. It happens on the road, in the water, if you're driving your boat. First thing is awareness that you're not going in the right direction. Well, I saw a thing the other day that sort of compiled a nice, no, baker's two dozen of reasons that I think we can all agree, before we start talking about fixes, let's all agree what's broken before we start fixing it. Here it is.
A warning to America. 25 ways the U.S. is being destroyed in under 2 minutes. 1, open borders and illegal immigration. 2, rampant crime and unsafe cities. 3, mass addiction and fentanyl. 4, election insecurity and interference. 5, the educational indoctrination of children. 6, the asymmetrical weaponization of justice. 7, the destruction of private property rights. 8, inflation and debt. 9, the global depopulation agenda. 10, record low fertility and plummeting birth rates. 11, unaccountable federal bureaucracies. 12, toxic food supply. 13, vaccine and pandemic disinformation. 14, the trans contagion and sterilization of children. 15, overprescription of pharmaceuticals. 16, destruction of the nuclear family and parental rights. 17, DEI and the new racism. 18, moral and societal decay. 19, the financing of endless foreign wars. 20, the sprawling surveillance state. 21, the centralization and consolidation of government power. 22, the destruction of trust in institutions. 23, the censorship industrial complex. 24, state media propaganda. 25, the smearing of those who challenge it.
Okay, so that's a pretty thorough catalog, and you may agree or disagree more or less with one or more of those, but even if you those are all significant and individually themselves threats to our society and our way of life here in America. So if you agree that things aren't headed in the right direction on one or more of those counts, I mean, at least we should have discussions about how do we begin to turn that around. And I guess you just look historically and you say, in general, these United States of America did better when the government was less involved in our lives, promising things to us that formerly we used to do for ourselves. I have no problem with the government robustly defending our national security. I have no problem with our government spending money even to help support our allies across the globe to some limited extent with a limited and defined mission strategy. You can argue about that. But I think we could argue, and Jim Talent did that with us last week, and I think he did it eloquently. Very good people who are strong patriots say there may be a role there. We can talk about it. But is there a role for the government to be paying for child care? I mean, as much as all of you out there would like to, if you're a businessman or woman, hey, I want to have my workers have child care so I can have more workers. Well, put a child care in your facility. There are businesses doing that. I'm sorry, you know, I, as Austin Powers said, I'd like a gold-plated toilet too, baby, but I'm not getting one, right? I mean, and is it the government's role to pay for my health care? Really? There used to be this thing back in the 50s, I think it was the late 50s, called Blue Cross Blue Shield. It was a nonprofit major medical insurance plan for when you needed to go to the hospital to deliver a baby, go to the emergency room, get a heart surgery. Well, we didn't do heart surgery in the 50s. A gallbladder, you know. But you paid for your own medical bills. Guess what? Things were affordable then. Then the government got into making promises that, oh, we're going to take care of you. We're going to Medicare, Medicaid. Look, it's gone crazy. People on Medicare that fall in the donut hole, they're getting reamed with their expenses on that. So they give you a little morsel. They give you a little morsel of some taste, a little sweet. And then you're like, I like that sweet. Give me a little more sweet. Well, if you vote for me, I'll give you a little more sweet. See where it goes? And can't we realize that that's where corruption lies? When one human being can coerce another human being's privacy, productivity, output for the benefit of another, and by means of the state power enforce that ability, all's lost. That's why we don't have trust in our institutions. That's why Donald Trump is being prosecuted in New York City and in Atlanta. In Fulton County. That's why he's being prosecuted by Jack Smith for inciting riot. Oh, yeah, let me see. How do you incite a riot when you say we're going to peacefully march to the Capitol? Not through, not into those people who did breach the Capitol and who forcefully broke in should be prosecuted. Just like if they'd have broken in on the streets of Chicago's Magnificent Mile and busted into storefronts. You shouldn't have the right to prevent Jewish students from entering the quadrangle of Columbia University because you've gathered zombie students who don't know why the heck they're there and said, let's form a human chain. any rational person would say that is flat wrong. And if you defend it, you're a little bit crazy. Sorry. Okay, we got only a minute or so. Why does everyone wait to call till the last minute? Okay, go ahead, caller. You're on.
Hey, Randy, it's Gene. Just real fast. I agree with you completely.
Hi, Gene.
The government gets involved with stuff and we're messed up. And unfortunately, I think there's so many people, all of us included, that are in one way, shape, or form getting sugar from Uncle Sam that it's like, oh, well, nah, that's okay. I'll give you $40 and give me 10 cents and I'm fine. On all these students and stuff out at these universities and everything, it's a disgrace that there's people that are taken away from the education that they're getting paid, that they're paying for, beside getting their rights taken away from them, the Jewish students, and then people that have worked so hard that are graduating this year, that are looking forward to a nice, proper graduation, and they've gotten that taken away from them.
You're right. I mean, these kids that aren't going to graduate at USC, they didn't have a high school graduation, many of them. And
That's true.
I don't know. But, you know, it's incumbent on those of us who have any influence on these people who are so misguided. God love them. I mean, they're sinners like the rest of us. It's just that their sins are now overt and influence a lot more people than an individual sin against another individual. You know, we should, out of love and respect, say, hey, get yourself together. You don't belong here. Get back in the class. Stop it. But you got college professors that are endorsing this stuff. I don't know, man. I don't get it. Hey, well, thanks, Gene. Appreciate your call. We'll try to figure it out next week, brother. Same to you. All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this episode of The Tobler Show. If you didn't get to catch all of it, I think we had a lot of great interviews and commentary. So make sure you stay in touch with us, which Jerome will have up next week. For Jerome, this is Randy. Remember, you can't count on government when it's all over. You can't count on politicians. You can only count on your faith, your family, and yes, try to preserve that freedom. We'll see you next time on The Tobler Show.